You're listening to DraftKings Network.
We've got two major stories locally, and neither one of them is the fact that college football is poured into this city. I see all the ESPN money on Ocean Drive as I wait still for a printer that hasn't come for 4 months. College football national championship is here, but one of the major two local stories we will be discussing in this local hour is not the championship of college football in this, the most bogus college football season ever played.
I'm guessing you're never going to see that printer. I mean, just.
Well, I've got someone. I've got Bob, who's going to be on the cover of Forbes in 2 years, according to Stugatz, with his Miners helmet. I saw him constructing something out there. I got very excited because I'm like, we've got a printer. Mike Ryan's going to be able to hand me a piece of paper like a professional radio show for the first time in 4 months.
I don't have him on the cover of Forbes. Mike has him on the cover of Forbes. And because I can't remember Bob's name every Monday that I come in here, I just call him Forbes.
I just blurt out Forbes. Well, you did a couple of funny things when you came in here today. You didn't just yell Forbes at Bob the engineer in his Miner's helmet. You did something else that was funny and leads us to what I'm going to wrap in a local story, because one of the very cool things that happens around here, I don't know if it's the coolest because we got a long list of the coolest, is that you guys somehow in this audience develop some of the allegiances and caring about how our sports teams do, how, you know, our Miami teams do, or in the case of Mike Ryan, how the Browns do. So Stugatz comes in here today and he says, I don't care if you want it. I don't care if there's a pandemic. And he comes in and he hugs the armpit of an uncomfortable but joyous Mike Ryan, both of them wearing masks, both of them breaking what would have been Disney protocols to celebrate the first Browns playoff victory of Mike's adult lifetime.
You are right. I was snuggled very, very comfortably in Mike's armpit.
You both looked very happy. You were happy as a long-suffering Jets fan because after 20 damn years, I mean, you got the Bills winning a playoff game. You got the Tampa Bay Bucks are relevant all of a sudden. But there has been no bigger loser across sports, maybe the Detroit Lions, than Mike's football team, which he developed an allegiance to only because his abuela one time bought at a dollar store a plate of Cleveland Browns. I don't even know what was it. What did the plate look like?
Paper plate and napkins with a Cleveland Browns logo on it, which, as you know, is the most boring logo in all of sports. And I was there one Sunday. They were playing the Dolphins, and my allegiance was born there. I wasn't born into it out of being out of Northeast Ohio, but I stuck with this team, and it's been a miserable experience the entire way. And then last night happened.
There was a couple of things. So when the Jets had their run, and that's the only time Mike has seen me have any sort of football success, okay? So when the Jets had their run.
2 years, two AFC.
Back-to-back AFC championship games. Mike was very, very happy for me. He was extremely excited for me, and I wanted to repay that to him because I've seen Mike have sports happiness. I've seen him get LeBron James. I've seen the Heat win two NBA titles, go to the NBA Finals last year. I've seen the Canes, you know, have a big game against Notre Dame a couple of years ago that got Mike super excited. I've never seen him have NFL happiness. And it's because until last night, he's never had that.
Well, Kelly
and
Holcomb,
I wanted to give him a hug this morning,
His greatest playoff achievement this century is Kelly Holcomb in a loss for Butch Davis throwing for like 400 yards in a playoff loss.
Did anyone else go on the roller coaster ride with me last night of starting the game genuinely rooting for Mike and saying, you know what, Mike deserves this, let him have his night? And then it got to 28-0, and you just said to yourself, it would be really good for the show if they blew this.
It would have been good for the
show.
And
that is what I just went into that mode. I have not rooted for a game that I didn't have betting interest on so hard in that second half just because of how good today's show would have been if they blew that.
I was thinking that as well. But Mike was funny where he starts the game just happy to be here, okay? And then we all start mocking him because once you're up 21-0 or 28-0, you're no longer happy to be here. You start thinking about the Super Bowl.
Well, hold on a second, because I want to talk to Mike about this, because I'm not sure, given how long Mike has covered sports the way that we cover them, even though he can be unreasonably emotional, I'm going to take a different stab at where Mike is with that.
Okay.
That it is so specifically joyous to beat that football team. and that quarterback. When Ben Roethlisberger has more wins in your stadium than any Browns quarterback, that the guy in this century who's won more games in that stadium than any quarterback is Ben Roethlisberger. It's not a Browns quarterback. That the joy in, oh, he's old, he can only throw short, and our time now, our young people are coming for him. Everything's gravy from here. You don't expect to beat the Chiefs. You don't expect to be up on the Chiefs. Everything's gravy. That specific team that has been your personal Patriots, it's been to you, it's been to the Browns, what the Patriots have been to the Dolphins for 20 years, that you beat them, you knock them out at the knees, and he looks old specifically because he can't throw the ball down the field anymore. I would think that anything from here is gravy.
And he's sitting on the bench sobbing after the game, tears pouring from his eyes. And the Browns are the ones that did it. That team is in salary cap hell. He's got a $40 million cap number, which by the looks of last night, I mean, he's always talking about retiring at the end of the season, and then he can never say no to the money, so we'll see what happens there. But their immature slot receiver that was saying that the Browns is the Browns headed into that game, it doesn't matter that they're in the playoffs because they're still wearing that helmet and they're going to find a way. I wasn't able to enjoy 28-0 or 35-7 the way that most teams are, just because I'm constantly reminded. Al Michaels did a very good job of constantly reminding who I am. It was just that sort of joy was always reserved for fans of the Steelers. It didn't matter what debate I was in, whether it be a political debate, high school, teasing. It would always end up with me being a Browns fan. And I would always fear that in any sort of, because people always had the Trump card on me because
you're laughing stock. You've been a laughing stock for 20 years.
I chose to be this loser. And I know what happiness is in other sports. I don't have a single identifiable moment where the team has brought me joy. The most joyous moment of my Browns fandom was making the playoffs. It was a week ago. And to be able to do it specifically to that team, which it's not a small thing. In that division, it's been very hard. Those are two very successful teams in the Ravens and Steelers. And they're constantly reminding you of who you are. Not just by their success, but because of their vocal fan bases, were an absolute joke. And to be able to have a night, it was, I couldn't even process it. I was not drinking last night. I was nervous. I was pacing. And I was more stunned than Mike Tomlin was at what was happening. And
Mike Tomlin expected that, right, Billy? Mike Tomlin totally expected that. They prepared for that, did they not?
If he knew that was coming, he wouldn't show up, you would think, right? I
mean, he knew. He knew it was coming. He just didn't tell us. Who did you? You must have enjoyed. What was the highlight for you? Was it seeing Ben sobbing on the sidelines?
The highlight for me was when it was 00, and I realized that it wasn't a fever dream, and I saw. Honestly, the coolest moment, this is going to be weird. It wasn't the postgame celebrations. It wasn't Baker putting on a backwards hat for the Zoom meeting, which I really enjoyed.
He did that for those of you who do not know, Colin Cowherd has, later in life here, becoming your grandfather of sports takes. He has identified he's going to plant his flag in quarterbacks who wear their hats backward cannot succeed because they're too immature.
I'm not going to get mad at Colin for that take because at the time, it was such a great take. It was just an original take. No one had ever had that take before, and no one's ever had it since.
Now he keeps reheating it with like a crappy microwave, and it goes viral every time. God bless him. More articles written about that than a 16-minute symphony that we had with original music featuring Kenny G and Method Man. So he must be doing something right. I'm not jealous at all. The coolest moment for me wasn't Corvette and Jarvis doing that and our first round draft pick tweeting out Browns is Browns and showing that we had a memory like that, because they did. They took inventory of everything that was said. There was a moment at the end of the game where Myles Garrett was running off the field and he smiles and he turns back to Baker Mayfield. They look at each other. They jump up in the air, collide bodies, and there's just absolute joy. I put a picture of that on my Instagram because the Browns are not the poster children for tanking. It hasn't worked for this franchise really ever outside of this one time. That was 0-16 for Myles Garrett, 1-15 for Baker Mayfield, and that was the end result. That was so long ago. Hell, the Marquise Pouncey snap felt like so long ago. I've come so far. But to have like the face of those seasons, the pot of gold at the end of those crappy rainbows, that to me was the coolest moment.
I just want to explain to you how this works. I understand what you said. Like, Mike's playing with house money now. The Browns are playing with house money. I'm just going to go like 2010, and I remember this. The Jets beat the Colts at Indianapolis, so they had beaten Peyton Manning. And then you start to think maybe we're onto something here. Like, we beat Peyton Manning on the road in Indianapolis. And then the next week, we went to Foxborough, and it was house money. Until you're up 3 points in the fourth quarter, and then it no longer becomes house money, you have an expectation you're going to win the game. And if you don't, you're going to start breaking things in your house.
I'm not.
And the Jets won that game. And then they go to Pittsburgh, and I'm telling you, I was thinking Super Bowl. Because after you beat Brady and Manning, you're thinking Super Bowl on the road. And Mike's going to have one of those moments where he's up 3 points against Mahomes, and he's going to expect to
win. I'm going to enjoy this one.
I am not saying that there isn't the possibility from here on out that Mike Ryan won't be hurt by this football team. One game, one season, do not erase the last 20 years. I am saying, however, he's not built like you to knee-jerk from snap to snap. Like, of course, you're looking at it from your perspective, which is that you will jerk violently in whatever direction is suitable to you because you don't learn anything or retain anything from previous experiences.
I mean, Dan, he wears a mask with a dog face on, okay? Like, this is not like some sort of scholar. Of course he's going to knee-jerk and think that they're going to make it to the next round.
I didn't make him a scholar. I'm just saying that he has some perspective as it regards these things.
You're making him some sort of nuanced, non-crazed fan. Mike's crazier than all of us.
I am a little bit different. It's not because I've had all this life experience and I have a beautiful baby girl that I love so much has changed my perspective. Really? I just watched Ted Lasso. I'm a different man because of it.
Right. Your Twitter feed didn't seem like a different man.
I mean, I'm just, you know, placating the fans of the show. I really wasn't in a creative space. Although the LeBron chalk toss with cocaine, I am proud of.
Starting to regret.
That was good.
Yeah, I'm starting to regret that I hugged you, man. You're a jackass.
We'll get back to this in a second. One of the interesting things, Stugatz, from this weekend, because I know that you've been wanting to proclaim a winner of the Who Gets the Credit Bowl, and now Bill Belichick hasn't made the playoffs and Tom Brady has won a playoff game. But I will just say for the record, in both of them being diminished slightly by leaving each other, that Tom Brady just played a first-round playoff game without a bye on the road, and he won it. But that's not something he ever had to do when he was in New England. Like that, they never had to bother with that. The reason that New England kept going to Super Bowls and winning them is because they always got this week off. They didn't have to go now limping into their next venue to face a rested team. That's not something Tom Brady had to do very often. But I've been remiss in not mentioning before now, Chris, you know what the other big story of the weekend is, right? You know what the other big local story of the weekend is. Chris Mortensen is saying, not only, this is fairly amazing for Dolphin fans, not only does Deshaun Watson want out of Houston, he wants out of Houston for reasons that have more to do, or as much to do, according to Chris Mortensen, with the way that they have handled some of the social injustice in America, the way they handled some of their general manager search, where they just end up, you know, basically going to the guy who is the team pastor for the Patriots and bypassing all sorts of more qualified people. He was one kind of mad when they lost or traded Hopkins, but he's even angrier now, even though he has a no-trade clause. And not only that, Stugatz, but he has specifically identified Miami for whatever his reasons. And I'm guessing it's at least in part because Miami's leadership is black. Like, I'm guessing that that's part of what's happening there. If he's so upset by the fact that Houston has whiffed on this stuff when it comes to sort of consulting with him as a black leader on the team, a quarterback with some legitimate power, who is young, who wants some who wants some consultation in how things are going to be built around him. The fact that Mort is talking about Houston trading Deshaun Watson for Tua and, you know, getting some of their draft picks back,
which would be
just amazing mismanagement. Like, to lose Hopkins, to lose Watson, to trade for Laremy Tunsil, to have a bad season, and then trade back for your pick. That's amazing mismanagement, like intergalactically dumb mismanagement that should make everybody in the Texans organization go back to Bill O'Brien's house right now and try to fire him again.
Well, it's on them for letting Bill O'Brien run their organization, to be honest, for as long as he did without having anyone in place to help him out. So you have the black GM and the black head coach down here in Miami, and I'm certain that factors in, but you also have great leadership, period, regardless of color, and you have a great foundation for a good football team that appears like it's a really good quarterback away from being an amazing football team for a long time.
Why separate the race there, though, when you've got Mort reporting specifically that Watson has some trouble with what's happened with their leadership there, and Miami is the single blackest leadership group you will find anywhere in football? Why are you saying, well, their leadership is great, it doesn't matter that they're black?
Well, no, I was trying to make the point that they do have black leadership and they have great leadership, but I'm not certain it's just black leadership. I think he sees a very good football team run by two black guys.
I mean, he doesn't see a lot of skill guys. What skill guys does he see that makes him?
I think
he
sees a team that was 10-6.
But what skill guys does he see that he says, I want to come play with those guys?
I think he thinks he can make any guys pretty. I think he looked at Devontae Parker.
He didn't this year. He didn't this year. He didn't make anybody look good this year. All they did was lose.
But I think he sees enough in way of young players, defense,
why the need to separate it? I'm asking you a question. Why the need to separate it?
Let's say it was a really bad team, but had a black head coach and a black GM. You still think he's going to that team?
But it can be both of those things. I don't understand why you're eliminating the thing that I'm pointing out when Mort is specifically saying that one of the reasons he's upset, more upset than he was with DeAndre Hopkins, is because they said they were going to go search committee and do it fair, and they ended up, the owner of the team just ended up doing the same thing all these owners do. I don't think that's irrelevant. I think it's part of why you're seeing it reported this weekend.
Okay, I'm not eliminating it at all. I'm telling you, if they were run by the same two guys and were 1-15 last year, I don't know how much
Deshaun Watson wants to be. But there are plenty of teams that are 10-6 that could use a quarterback that don't have Tua, and he's choosing Miami for some reason. I'm telling you, it's not irrelevant. Like, I don't think Mort.
I don't think
Mort is reporting it because it's irrelevant.
Oh, it's absolutely a factor specific to what's gone on in Houston. You even have a search firm that the Texans ownership pays $100,000 to find a candidate for, and you bypass that and you go with the white guy you wanted anyways. I'm sure it's a factor. However, I ask you this: if Greer and Flores are in Indianapolis, do you see that report come out? No.
I mean, Miami helps too.
Miami
is multicultural, and that helps too. I don't think
his last Instagram is from a boat. Okay, Miami is awesome. He wants to be in Miami.
He also led the league in passing yards this year.
Yeah.
With the crappy year that he had, so you could almost make the argument from the Texans side, like that's why we got rid of those skill guys, because you could still throw for that many passing yards without those guys. But this is a dangerous game the Dolphins are playing. We're in a new marriage. We're 1 year in. They say the first year is the toughest year of marriage. And we're over here, you know, liking Instagram posts, texting with another married woman. And it's just a dangerous game. Of course, I don't think there's a debate, right? Any Dolphin fan can acknowledge, regardless of your ceiling for Tua, Deshaun Watson is an elite quarterback. Like, that's a trade you make even if you think Tua is going to be good. Like, you're not insulting Tua by wanting Deshaun Watson, but it's a dangerous game.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. Is the first year of marriage the most difficult year of marriage? That's not something I've heard before.
It's the honeymoon phase.
It's
supposed to be the best year.
No, I think you guys are wrong. That's definitely a saying.
What?
Like, a lot of times you're living with people for the first time, like not always.
Till you get to year 20.
I've never heard that before. In my case, I would understand because there's a pandemic, but it's been a pretty magical first year of marriage. Like, I don't think it would... I've never heard the expression before. The first year of marriage would only be the most difficult year of marriage, I think, if you're certainly headed for divorce. If you've certainly and obviously married the wrong person. Has anyone else on this radio show heard the expression used before? The first year of marriage is the toughest year of marriage. And Chris, more to the point, are you ready to cheat on Tua? Because it sounded like you said all that, and then at the end you said, yeah, and I'd make this trade in a second after fawning and fluffing Tua for the better part of 12 months.
I mean, we're currently in a relationship. So yes, it's mean what we're doing to Tua, but Tua's like, you know, I don't want to give an example of a name of somebody that, you know, is on that. Like, you know, he's a 10. I mean, Deshaun Watson's a 10 and we're married to, you know, someone who could be an 8, right?
Right. Well, currently is a 5 and could be an 8, but will never be a 10. I think that's will never look as good as Deshaun Watson.
You've made that decision already.
Deshaun Watson had just under 5,000 yards passing this year, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, with no skill position players.
Guillermo, put it on the poll. Will Tua ever be a 10? Because I don't think, how old is Deshaun Watson? Is he 26? Because this is a player, obviously. I'm with you, Chris. I'm just playing devil's advocate because if I were Miami, I would try and get that in that game as quickly as possible if the Texans want Tua and are willing to make a trade that is Tua for Watson with some other pieces.
I mean, he's 25 years old.
I don't think there's anything that would make you hesitate there. If they call and say, we want Tua and some other things, you take that call and you get ready to get rid of Tua.
So I'm Googling hardest years of marriage. I'm seeing a good amount of articles on why the first year of marriage is tough and stuff. I'm not like obviously seeing any definitive article about it being the tough. And then I just typed in hardest year of marriage and an article that says the seventh year of marriage is the most challenging. So I could have been a little off.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah. I found a quote from a relationship therapist, Amy Harstein, who said the first year really is the hardest, even if you've already lived together. So there you go.
Man, Billy. Thank you.
Roy,
you could have probably found an article going in any direction there, and I appreciate you.
Roy, are you headed into your seventh year of marriage? Is that why you moaned, uh-oh, has it actually been 7 years since we were in that church together? It doesn't feel like it's been 7 years.
It's been 6 years as of yesterday, so we're getting close.
Oh, Roy.
All right, but enjoy this last year, Roy.
I mean,
what a weird thing. Why would it be the seventh year and not the sixth year and not the eighth year? What sense does that make?
It's very odd. You're in your first year of marriage. It's been fantastic, right?
Even in a pandemic, it's been wonderful. The weird thing about this year for me, it's unbelievably strange for me. It has been the shittiest year of my work life.
Right.
It has been the shittiest year in America that I have ever experienced. And it is the best year at home that I've ever experienced. So the shrinking of my life to eliminate people has been a godsend. Like it legitimately has been something that has made my life more manageable, but it's only because I don't want to go anywhere. Like I can't be alone there, right? Like this is there have to be some people listening to me and some people right here on this show who have enjoyed with some guilt, perhaps, the fact that an American crisis has resulted in a home life that has simplified your life at a time that many people are suffering, right? Because I don't take any joy in delivering what I'm delivering. It's just been super strange in that regard.
Yeah. I'm oddly grateful for because I have two daughters who are going to be going to college in less than 2 years. I can't believe I'm saying that, right? Like, we have grown up. Like, my kids have grown up with you and I doing this radio show.
We've talked about this before. What an enormous blessing you have gotten for daughters of that age.
Amazing.
Before they go to college to get that concentrated amount of time at a time when teenagers would not normally have any time for you whatsoever right now before going to college.
And now they can't wait until daddy gets home because, you know, they're sitting there, they're doing the school thing. And then they're, you know, my wife is dealing and she's always yelling at them because she's with them 24/7. So they're getting on each other's nerves. And then I come home and it's fun time. And so it's just, I have been able to spend a great, just small things, playing tennis, watching 24, a show that I love with one of my daughters.
How old are your daughters? They're 16 now?
16. They're juniors in high school. It is, I'm super, now it's weird because we're going through a pandemic and people are struggling, but it's been oddly satisfying for me only because I've gotten to spend that kind of time with my daughters. Time I would not necessarily be able to spend because they'd be out getting hammered every weekend.
What is the age when kids stop calling their father daddy? Is it before 16?
I don't think we're going to find a definitive answer for this one, Dad.
Is it 16?
My kids started calling me dad.
Oh,
instead of daddy.
But you still call yourself daddy.
I do, yes.
Their daddy. Okay, because the reason I was asking the question is because I was surprised that 16-year-old girls were still referring to you as daddy, and you're like, no, I'm the only one who's still going with the daddy. They're not going with daddy anymore.
It's one of the things they don't tell you because a lot of guys, I was like this. I wanted a boy. You know, you want a boy so you can do all whatever. But a girl, they always fight with their – I mean, I'm noticing this with my three-year-old. Oh, they just have this tension with their mother, and they love daddy. Yep. Like, it is just – this is the best part about having a daughter is that the mom gets all the stress relationship and the dad is the king.
Yeah, it's the best.
Chris, I got to talk to you about what happened with your dad this weekend.
That annoyed the shit out of me.
Wait a minute. Do you know what happened?
I was more involved than you thought of like the lengths I was willing to go to make that easier on him. And it was his 40th.
Let's talk about this. Yeah. So Cody got beat on a quote unquote big story that he had on our radio show, Stugatz. And I'm going to tell you people over the coming days, over the coming months, really, as we go on this free agency experience with you and show you all of the nooks and crannies of how this happens, where we are a floating pirate ship that you've made the number one podcast in America, but we don't belong to anybody. We're not owned by anybody. We've got people lining up. It's not just people wanting to sign a deal with us. We've got sponsors lining up, wanting to help us. We've got friends of the show lining up, wanting to help us. And one of them with whom we're going to get into business with to go find us a sponsor is the former president of ESPN for 10 years. For 10 years, this was the most powerful executive in sports. You would have seen him at the top of every list in sports as the most powerful man in sports. He's coming over. John Skipper, the guy who brought us to ESPN, who built these studios, who made Miami and our stuff matter. He's coming over to be the CEO of this thing. And the story leaked this weekend. This has been an uncomfortable, hugely uncomfortable time where we've had to keep people around here in the dark because he's got a big job with DAZN. And if that leaks, it would have been problematic. And so finally, before we were ready to announce it, a reporter started sniffing around and asking questions. And when that reporter started sniffing around and asking questions, I call Greg Cody to tell him, hey, this is about to break. I want to give you this story because it's about to break. And he's like, I'm at the beach. Can I just give it to somebody else?
Oh, boy.
That's how it happened. Now,
What?
Yes.
And I know what you're thinking. Yes, it was Greg Cody that said that.
I'm thinking, what is he doing at a beach in the middle of a pandemic?
Okay, well, hold on. So let's go through the backstory because I haven't experienced this through Chris because evidently his whole family. Now, in his defense, okay, it was his 40th anniversary. But what he actually says to me as I'm calling him because a reporter is sniffing around and he's been sniffing around for weeks. This is one of many announcements that are going to be coming out over the next 2 months. There's going to be all sorts of cool stuff around this and we're very excited to share all of the pieces of it with you. But this is the first domino to fall. And he's been specifically asking a whole bunch of questions. And I've been telling him, I'm not ready yet. We're not ready yet. But when I call him, his response was, I'm not making this up, guys. And you think the entitlement's a joke? Man, you couldn't give me more notice, huh? And I'm like, my response is like, I can't control when a reporter's going to have their teeth in the story.
As if you knew.
That's correct. Like, what do you mean? Chris, I don't think the part that he totally screwed up. He gave a secret to another reporter at the Miami Herald that he was not supposed to. So he ends up betraying me anyway. The Miami Herald ends up reporting it, and I get in trouble with the people I'm dealing with because all of a sudden the Miami Herald's got a story that they shouldn't have, and Greg Cody gave it to him, just handed it over because I told him what the story was. And I'm guessing he was 12 beers in, and he just called a reporter at the Herald and gave him the story. So he ends up betraying me anyways. Chris, I'd be fascinated, though, to experience this from your perspective, because I couldn't believe the entitlement in it. I couldn't believe that he was defending his behavior. I don't know how I keep getting surprised by this shit. I really don't.
I just got a text from my mom saying, hey, perfect timing. We just got to lunch down here on the beach, and it looks like your dad, has a chance to write this story, but he doesn't have his laptop. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, I feel like my dad maybe could have seen the possibility of this coming and could have brought in his laptop. But you know what? It's your anniversary. I will go to your house. I will grab his laptop. I will bring it all the way down to the beach for you. That's what I was willing to do. And, you know, to my dad, I hate to rip my dad for this because he genuinely just was like, some things are more important, and this is my 40th anniversary. And when he hit me with Chris, that, I was like, wow, Chris, this is the most shocking thing. Like, because Greg Cody, Mr. Clicks, Scoops Cody, Like, you'd think this would be a big enough thing to get him to take an hour. It wasn't like it was the middle of his dinner. They had a big dinner planned Saturday night. He could have, I feel like in that 3 to 5 range, he could have just snuck away to the hotel room and done it. But, you know, he chose love.
Stephen A. Smith was writing columns on his phone for several years. Like, the idea that he couldn't string something together that was 5 paragraphs long from his phone because he needed you to run, get him a computer is fairly amazing.
Are you upset that he didn't do it and didn't hustle, or are you more upset that he gave the story to someone else? Like, if he just didn't write it, would you have been fine?
No, what happened, I'm going to be totally honest here, okay? I ran across my apartment when it was sent from one of the people I have gone into business with. What is this doing in the Miami Herald? Screaming curse words in a way that startled my wife and made her worry that something really awful had happened. And I had to look up and say, no, it's just Greg Cody being totally incompetent again. Like, she thought something, she's never seen me like that, just screaming at my phone. There was nobody on the phone. I'm just reading on the phone a text from somebody saying, what is this doing in the Miami Herald? And I'm just bleep, 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 like storming across the house because I know how it got in the Miami Herald. Greg Cody, probably drunk, just gave it to a reporter.
Has Cody become some sort of like John McClane for you? Remember Die Hard, the original movie where his ex-wife is saying John must be here or he's still alive because only John can get someone that angry.
Only Greg Cody can make someone that angry.
But if Greg reported it, it would also be in the Miami Herald, right? So what's the difference? Also, Dan, I mean, 40th anniversary, you know what they say, 40th year, toughest year of marriage. You had to tend to that.
The thing that makes it hard to be too mad at him is 40th anniversary and him choosing love. If indeed that's what he was doing, I'd say, of course. But it's just your dad being a lazy oaf. Like, he's not actually choosing his marriage in that spot. It's just your father being lazy, wanting to be near the action in the laziest possible way.
I have another detail about it that I don't know he would want me to admit, and I don't even know if you guys, like, so I'm just going to say this, and if it's that bad, we could take it out after.
No, we're not taking anything out. Listen, this is the way we're doing the show right now. Everything goes in. Nobody knows when they're on air. We're totally free. No taking anything out.
This makes my dad, it seemed a little bit even more selfish. Like, he, you know, you're thinking right now, oh, almighty Greg Cody, he chose love. He sacrificed the clicks. I'm pretty sure because he gave the story to the Herald, he gets this like quiet clicks thing. So he's getting credit for all these clicks from the Herald.
That's what happened.
Publicly.
That's what happened.
In his mind, he's like, I'm good. I got the clicks. My boss knows it was me. Boom. Good. But it just the part of the show,
that's right,
you know, being connected to him, that's what he didn't care about.
We have to go forward. Mike, we need to make some executive decisions here because costs are getting steep. And as a startup business, and we are very much going to end up being a startup business, we have to be judicious about how we spend our money. And I'm thinking Greg Cody works as a unpaid intern the rest of the way, like not a dollar from us, not $1, because he doesn't do any work. He doesn't do anything. All he does is profit off of this. He does nothing other than expect to sit there and be in the middle of the action on Tuesdays. And so I am thinking of cutting his pay to $0. He makes nothing. He just gets to hang around with us and better be happy that even that is still the case.
That's funny you bring that up because that's another conversation we had where I've just kind of been like, all right, Tuesday, I'll see you. And like assuming, and he's just like, I haven't talked to Dan about numbers.
It's,
I don't know.
It's totally fine.
I don't know how it's working going
Chris,
forward.
Chris, tell him we don't need him tomorrow. Just tell him we don't need him.
I'm not have Barry Jackson on.
Have Barry Jackson report that. Yeah,
no, have him as a guest co-host.
Have Barry Jackson on as a guest co-host. We should do that. All the people that Cody secretly hates.
What would hurt him the most? Would it be Barry Jackson or Dave Hyde?
Armando Salguero.
Oh, wow.
Shit.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, jeez.
That hurt me. I mean, no.
We need to do this, Chris. We need to figure out. Let's not call him. Let's not send him a Zoom link. Let's not. This man's entitlement is out of control. We've got to get it we've got to get it harnessed, man. Like, do you I don't think I've been that angry at anybody in the last 6 months about anything, where I'm stomping around the house cursing in my phone because just his general incompetence and selfishness has resulted in us having something happen before it was supposed to happen. So Billy, you say what difference does it make it appeared in the Herald? A reporter had that story, did actual work, held the story until we got back with either confirmation and no comment. In the space in between, I called your father with some urgency. This is about to break. The guy who did the work ends up getting beat by a guy who did nothing on the beach other than take quiet clicks. Like, it's just, it's simply wrong.
Is it safe to say that if you were that angry at any point over the last 6 months, it was also at Greg Cody?
Yeah, probably. Okay. Probably. It's, I don't know what to do with it, but this has taken a turn this morning that it shouldn't take. So if you get Deshaun Watson for Tua, Chris, just, I want to hear it clearly from you. Billy, you haven't said how you feel about this. As a Dolphin fan, is there any hesitance with you? You ship Tua off right away. Bye-bye. For Watson, yes or no?
I mean, it all depends how Tua does in Texas, obviously. If they do well, if Tua does well and he's good, then it was a horrible trade. Dan, you need to do, it's the long game with these opinions, Dan. It's the long game. Right now, you make the deal. 2-3 years from now, if it doesn't work out, Dante Culpepper, what were you doing? Why didn't you take Drew Brees? Everybody knew he was going to win a Super Bowl. When it was going on, everybody wanted Dante Culpepper.
Oh, I love
he was
Dante
in the Madden
Culpepper.
Commercial, getting his roll on, going into the end zone. Oh, Dante Culpepper. I'd still make that trade today, I think.
Yeah, Billy is so right about this, Dan. You can't really give your opinion on these things until you see how it plays out.
That's a hard way to do a sports radio show. Like, I am with Billy on, he gets to not be wrong the way that he just did
perspective,
it.
Perspective, Dan. Perspective. That's what I'm bringing to this.
Mike, were you having trouble sleeping last night?
Yeah, yeah. My wife went to bed, and I was very upset with her. She's like, at halftime, I'm tired. I'm going to go to sleep. I'm like, don't you know who we are? We're winning. You can't go to sleep because we're winning. I was very superstitious at the time, so I took great joy in waking her up when I was finally ready to go to bed, hug her, and said, we did it. She was a little upset. I'm like, Ben Roethlisberger is crying. I'm like, TikTok and Juju, and she had no idea what the hell I was saying. I'm like, Corvette, and she had, she was very confused. But this morning she was very happy for me, and that's the cool part, is people know like how tortured I had a high school teacher stay up and watch that game start to finish just because she knew how much this team has meant to me and what a loser I've been for supporting them. So it was really cool. I FaceTime my Browns fans again because we got to keep this going, and I can't believe, like, it's reserved for other teams. We're going to be playing a playoff game at Arrowhead against the greatest football player ever. Right, and
Well, no, that he's playing in New Orleans next week. That's Tom Brady.
Oh, okay.
But, Mike, did you take it all in? Post-game sound, of it? Did you listen to the post-game show on the radio? Like, what happened here?
I'm inhaling that and loads of cocaine, but I'm inhaling that as well.
How much did you sleep? How many hours? Because you're wired, right? You were wired.
I was just like, I can't believe this is real life. I can't believe do I deserve this?
And it wasn't 9-6 either. It was like, just bury them right the start. Yeah. Bury them.
And it got tight, but never one score tight. Like, oh no, they could get within one score tight. So it was a nice little bit of nerves, and it was good to see the Browns respond. But it's not just the history of the franchise. I think that's their first road playoff win since the 1960s. It's not just that. Hell, this week has been a year. Right? Just this week alone. Forget everything else.
Just
that's
the
going
viruses,
on.
Everything going on. You thought your first playoff appearance was going to get submarine just by pandemic bad Browns luck.
Yeah, I saw Michael Strahan on GMA. He's like, what a year this week has been with all the like the Capitol building stuff. And just for the Browns itself, like, two all pros in and out. You have no idea. People are driving to Pittsburgh. Half of them are flying to Pittsburgh. You have a special teams coach who's terrible at challenges being your head coach. Alex Van Pelt calling plays for the first time. Baker Mayfield said post game, because we had a replacement in for Joel Bitonio, who's an all pro. Dunn came in, filled in admirably. Dunn gets hurt, and we're playing a guy, I don't know his name. Baker said, I introduced myself to him before the game. I said, hi, I'm Baker. That's what we beat the Pittsburgh Steelers with at Heinz Field. The last time we won there, I think William Green had like 16 carries for -6 yards.
Would you sacrifice your Christmas every year if you meant the Browns would win a playoff game?
Yeah, this is the greatest gift.
Good question.
Yeah, I'm not fooling. This is the greatest Christmas gift.
So your Christmas was ruined because you got the coronavirus.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I never revealed that. But
oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, I might as well come out and say it now. Thankfully, I tested negative enough times so I could be here on Monday. But I tested negative 5 times while my wife had it. And then my daughter started having symptoms. She got it. 5 days later, I tested positive. Thankfully, I think I was asymptomatic. I did have back pain, which Ellen said is a symptom
you
nobody
keep
talks
that.
About.
That's Ellen, weird. You keep quoting That's Ellen weird. As yeah. like she's as if she's Fauci.
Well, she does that
well,
thing.
Well, listen, in fairness, at the beginning, I think it was it Deborah Messina? Who was it? There was someone we were getting Will and Grace.
Deborah Messing. You made Deborah Messina.
Deborah Messing.
How are you making this worse than Ellen? Like, how did you go?
Because I am telling you, she was tweeting about COVID-19, and we were all using it like it was gospel. I'm telling you.
No, Ellen did that thing where she texts a bunch of her famous friends and thinks that that's a way to relate to middle America, which actually it does in some sort of way. Well, Katy Perry told Ellen that her back hurt, so maybe it's a real thing. And that's what I got, and thankfully it got out of my system. So negative with antibodies now. Right. You can hug me.
All right. Well,
you said you digested all of the press conference stuff. Did Mike Tomlin explain why he didn't go for it on that 4th and 1?
That for real?
What the hell?
Chris, terrible. When he decided to punt in Browns territory, that's when it hit me like, oh, winning is an option here. When we were up 28-0, I'm like, I'm thinking that another chapter in my Browns heartache is just slowly forming. But then when he starts willingly deciding to give a terrible defense the ball back, and I'm like, yeah, just let your offense go to work. I'm like, wow, we can win this.
What made that puzzling, Chris, is he went for the touchdown instead of the field goal in the possession before. And once you, because he didn't want to make it a 2-score game with the field goal, so he went for the touchdown. He took a chance, and they got the touchdown. So that made it a 12-point game. But once you make that decision, you are telling your team, I'm all in. I'm going to go for it every time, 4th down, no matter what. And then he has a 4th and 1 on the next drive. You're right. It was a terrible decision.
Oh, my God.
And he's running the ball well.
It was their running game is bad. Like, I get it in theory, but it's like, just go for it.
No, but look, let me just do this for you, okay? Because I need to offer a little bit in the way of data here. Because while you guys are right, you guys are indisputably right that he should have gone for it. I will tell you that the decision Mike Tomlin made there was a scared coach who knows that over the last 6 games, his football team is bad. And I'm about to show you what he knows in that situation that he does not trust. Now, I think he should have gone for it, but listen to these stats from Peter King.
Okay.
Over their first 11 games, the Steelers were 317 points scored, 188 allowed. So that's 29 points per game. They're scoring 17 points per game they're allowing, and they were averaging 99 rushing yards a game. Over the last six games when they weren't 11-0, they were 1-5 over the last 6 games. They scored 136 points. They allowed 172, which means they were scoring 23 points a game, allowing 29, and their rushing yards from 99 to 52. Okay. Mike Tomlin limped into the playoffs with a bad football team, decimated by COVID and a whole bunch of things, and that 11-0 wasn't real. The Browns were a 5.5-point underdog in that game, but should not have been, even with all their COVID issues, because they were playing what, over the last 6 games, was simply a bad football team. Not a playoff team, not an average football team, a bad football team.
Mike, don't you feel good about, I know it's Kansas City, I know it's Patrick Mahomes, and I said this a few weeks ago, and I think Dan laughed at me back when we were still on ESPN. I said their game travels well, and they can win anywhere against any team because they could run the football with those two guys.
You can run the football. It's just stopping Patrick Mahomes. But you can keep Patrick Mahomes off the field. I think our running game, it depends on what Conklin and Betonio's status is, but I think our running game will be able to do what it wants in that game. I just don't know if we're going to get the stops necessary, but it's a defense. You saw it last night. It's a defense totally predicated on making a big play. If you make the big play, that's a stop. If you can get the ball and return it and make it easy on your offense, all gravy. They're going to need Denzel Ward to get back and do something, and Myles Garrett needs to continue affecting the game that he did last night. Even though he didn't make the impact play, he caused enough havoc to make others make the impact play. I don't think we're going to win that game,
what sucks,
but I do
Mike,
think it's going to be high scoring.
What sucks, Mike, is that you would prefer to play any of the remaining teams?
I'd feel like I'd have a shot against Buffalo and
that
Baltimore.
You would end up, no, but never mind AFC.
Buffalo's
any
good,
of the
man.
Remaining football teams. No, but he mm-hmm. would feel
no,
good
I know.
About his chances against any team except the one that he's playing.
Yeah. I do think that's a lot of points, though. The Browns can score with them. The Browns can keep up with them and do the thing where the running game goes off and you keep Patrick Mahomes on the sideline and hopefully, hey, maybe a center can snap a ball over someone's head again. That'd be nice.
Would you rather go to Kansas City or Green Bay? In Green Bay, you would feel the same way, right?
Those are two really good teams. We're not in that class. I think our point differential is now positive. We're not in the same class.
You
got to
hope for bad weather. You got to hope for bad weather that slows down Mahomes.
I can't believe.
But we're getting better week to week. We're, you see the difference. How the season started at Baltimore.
Yeah.
That first game against Pittsburgh. Cleveland is obviously a team that's ascending.
I can't believe in 2021, three of the final eight quarterbacks still are Brady, Breeze, and Rodgers.
I mean, Roethlisberger just limped off the field, aging the way quarterbacks are supposed to age.
Almost Phillip Rivers, too. Almost Phillip Rivers, who, look, it's never looked pretty leaving Phillip Rivers' hand, but Jesus Christ, no one had any faith in that ball making it to the end zone.
That snap by Pouncey, though.
It was so good.
It was so good.
Chris, yeah, my favorite part was, okay, so we've said for three seasons that watching Ben run around back there is like watching a skyscraper with legs because none of his parts are connected. He hasn't taken care of his body. Bomani was telling us this story the other day. Trevor Price told him this story, the defensive end who almost had 100 sacks, who Stugatz says is overrated. He says that tackling Tom Brady, because his physical parts are so well connected, the fascia from head to toe is just perfectly balanced. He says that when you tackle Tom Brady, he absorbs you. It feels like you're being absorbed. He says when you tackle Ben Roethlisberger, it's like shattering glass. that you dive into him and you've got shards in your neck because he hasn't taken care of himself.
That high-res photo of the tears pouring out of his eyes and just him sitting on, number one, just inject that directly into my veins.
I almost tweeted, I feel bad for Ben here, but then I remembered of all the stuff that he's done that's suspect.
Yeah. Don't feel bad for Ben.
His whiskey nose in that moment, like I do that. I'm like finding myself going to the iPhone screen and pinching it just because I want to see how much whiskey squirts out of the nose when I applied the slightest bit of pressure.
Did you guys notice that? So the ball is in the end zone. He didn't come close to recovering it because he has trouble going down to the ground and he has trouble getting up. And he just stands, or he's just on his hands and knees staring at the ball. Oh my God, I'm facing the wrong direction. My ass is 99 yards from where I would like it to be. I'm staring in the wrong direction, straight ahead. Oh no, we're down 7-0, and it's about to hurt to physically simply get up.
Him running backwards, running forward, but in the wrong direction, and then those peaks backwards.
Yes, he kept looking back. I know they're going to catch up. Yes,
they're not getting further
terrified
away.
Terrified peaks. Everyone's coming to get me.
So ever since I moved to my TV, I've noticed that I have a little bit of a delay. So I'm sitting down, the kickoff just happens, and the teams are running out to the field, and my phone starts blowing up. I'm afraid to look because you know what I'm assuming? People are texting me because Chase Claypool has just gone 80 yards on the first play because we're starting a special teamer out there guarding him. And then the snap happens. I'm like, whoa, that must be why they're texting me. And the ball keeps rolling and rolling. And Ben Roethlisberger is refusing to fall down. He's just watching this go in, like as if he's like on a punt team, like just wanting it to roll.
So gross.
It was so possible.
He wanted to down it at the one.
Right.
And then all these beautiful orange pants just slide into the screen, and it's 7-0. The Browns were up 21-0, and now Michael still hadn't gotten to the lineup graphic introducing the entire offensive line.
I love that. He wanted to down it at the one.